Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, July 8th, 2018. This is episode 1504. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Yes, time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We talk about smartphones. I know it's the same old litany every week. You know by now, but in case you're new, those are all the things we talk. Anything with a chip in it kind of is the rule. Let me give you my phone number so you can participate. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You can still call if you're outside that area. Don't worry. That's no hesitation. You just have to use Skype out or something like that. You know, something that lets you make a phone call over the internet. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. Let's see. Tuesday, the 10th anniversary of the App Store. What a phenomenon that's been. When Apple first announced the iPhone, they announced it in January 2007, and it came out in June 2007, 11 years ago. Steve Jobs said, and you don't, all you need is web apps. And Safari had the capability of, you could say, you know, this, go to a web page, say, put this on my homepage, and then that's it. That's all you had. Took him almost a year to come back, more than a year, I guess, to come back with the App Store. It's kind of unclear if Jobs didn't like the idea or if they felt the technology wasn't ready. But for whatever reason, he said you don't need the App Store. A year later, July 10th, 2008, Apple introduced the App Store and created a whole economy, right? I mean, in 10 years, billions and billions of dollars have been paid out to developers. There are programs, 10 of them, 10 games that have been downloaded more than a billion times each. What? There are companies making so much money in the App Store. A good example would be Fortnite. That's a game from Epic that came out a few months ago and has been making $150 million a day on the App Store. Pretty good. I think you could say it's a success. And Apple uses that success. I may be a little bit, you know, if you go to apple.com/jobs, which is a site they created to reassure the president that Apple was doing everything it could to create new jobs. They claim that Apple has, I think, created several hundred million jobs or something like that. And of course, most of those jobs are people who are slaving away desperately writing apps for the App Store, hoping to strike it rich, and, you know, we'll never see much, if anything, from their endeavors. Apple takes 30%. So if of everything. So if the total App Store sales, let me just look that up. I feel like it's in the, well, it was $60 billion in 2017, $60 billion in 2017, but, you know, that's considerably more than it's made in years since, or before, I should say. In fact, the amount of money it made in 2017 was more than all of 2007, obviously. Sensor Tower, because Apple doesn't say, but Sensor Tower says Apple's store revenues during the first half of 2017, $4.8 billion. That's more than they brought in for the whole of 2007. But of course, with only 500 apps, now there's millions of apps. Apple's doing quite well with the App Store. So happy anniversary. And I think we like it. There are critics. I have some misgivings about the App Store. It's kind of a walled garden. Apple doesn't let anything adult through, anything overtly political through. They're funny about what they say no to. But on the other hand, they don't let any malware through, for the most part. For the most part. So I think on balance, it's created a lot of jobs, generated a lot of revenue for programmers. It's given us some amazing toys and tools. On the balance, it's been a positive. So happy anniversary to the App Store. Millions of TVs in America are tracking more than just what you're watching or what's on tonight. Article in the New York Times this week says there's a program. Maybe you approved it. Samba TV. Do you remember when you first turned on your TV the first time you used it? It said, hey, to improve your viewing experience, we'd like to enable Samba TV. It will help you, I don't know, I can look at it. I can see it right now. Enable Samba TV. Interact with your favorite shows. Okay, that sounds good. Get recommendations based on the content you love. Okay. Control your devices for exclusive content and special offers. By cleverly recognizing on-screen content, Samba Interactive TV lets you engage with your TV in a whole new way. Now, why wouldn't you turn that on? Oh, wait a minute. Here's some more. By enabling, you're agreeing to the Samba TV Terms of Service and Privacy Policy. You can decide whether to disable Samba TV at any time from within your TV settings. Now, of course, I bet you most of you saw that. Did anybody read the Terms of Service of the Privacy Policy? Probably not. Or disable, which is way down at the bottom of the menu. At the top, helpfully pre-selected, is enable. And I bet most people turn it on. We know that 13.5 million people did in the United States. It's one of many companies that collect data from smart TVs. They've raised millions in funding. Sony, Sharp, TCL, Philips are some of the TVs that use Samba TV. Samba wouldn't give statistics, but one of its executives said at the end of last year that more than 90% of the people who saw that opted in. Said, yeah, what could go wrong? Samba TV tracks nearly everything that appears on your TV on a second-by-second basis, according to the New York Times, essentially reading the dots on the screen to identify network shows and ads, as well as programs on Netflix, HBO, even video games you play on your TV. They've even offered advertisers the ability to base their targeting on whether people watch conservative or liberal media outlets and which party's presidential debates they watched. But even more, Samba can also identify other devices in the home that share the TV's internet connection. It's going out on your network and saying, what else is out here? So when you put your television, you connect it up to your network via Wi-Fi or plugging it into the router, it's on a local area network that all those other devices are on. Unless you have multiple networks in the house or you take some extra steps to isolate it, which nobody does, it can see all the echoes, all the doorbells, everything that's connected to the internet in your house. And it records that and sells it to advertisers. Oh. They maybe should make that more clear. If you get a smart TV, you can go right now, go into the settings and disable it if you want. I don't know. Have you ever seen anything of value from Samba? This is, by the way, this is what's going on in the world around us. Every app you install on your phone has lots of, fine print that nobody reads that allows it to gather all sorts of information about what you're doing, where you're going, location, other apps on your phone. Yeah, they can find out. I think maybe we're starting to realize that while, you know, the idea of saying, hey, you're going to get ads for stuff you're interested in, that seems benign. That seems harmless. I'd rather see ads for stuff I'm interested in than stuff I'm not interested in. It can also be used in other ways, maybe less benign. Maybe it's something we should know about when we do it. When you wish upon a star, Kim Schaffer will appear. Magically, she's answering like the phones. Hello, Kim.
Good morning.
Happy
Sunday.
Sunday.
Are you over your World Cup hangover?
Go!
We were both streaming it throughout the whole show. That was the longest game ever.
Yeah, I don't like it.
That went from 10:30 to 2.
I love the World Cup. One of the things I love about it is that they don't break for commercials because the gameplay doesn't stop. Those guys run for 45 minutes. They take a break.
Major athletes.
Then they run for another 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Then, because it was a tied game,
30 more minutes.
They ran for another 30 minutes.
And then they had the shootout.
And that's the thing I don't like about the World Cup. What a terrible way to end a game.
Right.
I understand they can't run forever. So
yeah.
They're going to have some way of resolving it.
It doesn't seem like a fair way to win after all that work.
But. I was rooting against Russia because
so
I feel like they stole the games. It wasn't really... You know, Putin bribed everybody in the FIFA committee. This is back when FIFA was pretty corrupt. And
well, I found it interesting that the Olympics were there and the World
Cup
all in 1 year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah. I know those get determined way in advance, so we can't see.
2010, they figured that out. And then shortly thereafter, Sepp Blatter and all the FIFA executives were arrested for corruption. So, you know, I was listening. There was a story about it. And one of the things Putin apparently did, is accused of doing, is bribing the FIFA officials. There are 22 of them that decide what city the World Cup's going to be in, with Picassos from the Hermitage Museum, the National Museum in Russia.
Oh.
They just took paintings off the wall and said, here, have one.
These?
Have a painting. Eh, you might like this painting.
That's interesting.
It's from decadent Western artists. We don't need it. Here, have it. Give us soccer game. You can have Picasso. And actually, that's a pretty good trade.
It's a pretty good trade.
Yeah, we'll take it.
Wow.
So you've been here early in the morning. You got in about three seconds before I walked in. But
yeah, I know you pulled in.
But
we have a leftover from last week. I told him to call me back.
I love
and he
leftovers.
Did. So Max in Gardena, California.
Let's start with. Always eat the leftovers first, right?
Yes.
Before you
That's
open
what
up
my
the new.
Taught me.
Yeah. Well, Max, I'm sorry to say, but you're the leftover. Hello, Max. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks, Kim.
Hello, Leo. My question is there a way to, on an iMac, to using the master password, because I have 5 profiles, to reset another account without losing the content on that profile?
Yes. So, you have to be an administrator on the account, on the computer, obviously. So when you create, on the Macintosh, just like Windows, when you create users, they can be power users, administrators, or they can be standard users. But if you have an account that's a standard user, you can, let's see, you said reset. You can delete an account without deleting the data. So I think that would effectively be reset and then recreate the account. But I don't know if there's a way to just say, clean it out. What do you want? What is your goal here?
So my goal is I bought a new iMac and I transferred my profiles and data from my previous iMac.
Got it.
And I have 5 profiles on my old iMac. And everything seemed to go well except out of those 5 profiles, I can't get into to 2 of them.
Ah. You can't get into them.
Yeah, I can't get into them.
And it says because you don't, the password's wrong.
Yes, his password wrong, and I know the password for sure.
Is there data in those profiles, those logins that you want to keep?
Only in one of them.
Okay. So the other one, just delete it. As long as, again, as you're logged in as administrator, you can delete any profile. And then as you delete it, there'll be a checkbox, watch carefully, that says, you're going to delete the profile. Would you like to delete all its data? On the ones you don't care about, say yes. On the one you do care about, say no. And at that point, you won't have the account anymore, but that data will survive. And you will be able to access it as long as you're administrator from any other account. Move it, put it somewhere else, that kind of thing. Does that all make sense?
A little bit. So if I need to move the account to another account I create, how would I?
So if you look in your home, look on your Macintosh hard drive structure, and you'll see there's a users, capital U-S-E-R-S, folder. Inside there are all the five accounts, each with their own name. And those inside that folder are all the files belonging to that account. You can't access those files unless you have the login to that account. However, you can delete that account, and that will detach those data files from that account and let you access them now from any other account.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. We'll put – Mike B. is very handily giving me a link to a tech note from Apple's support site that we'll discuss the process of this. You can also reset the password if if you want to recover the account. You can reset the password. That's another thing you can do.
And would I do that with the administrator account as well? I mean, do I need?
Well, you have one administrator. Yes, you have to be an administrator to do any of this. They don't want somebody just to, with a standard user account to log in and modify files from other accounts. But the administrator has to be able to do this. One way you could do this, in fact, I would recommend, and this is good advice from the chat room, the administrator can change any password on any account without any effort. You just log in. You open up the user's system preference pane, and you go, and it says password, and you can change it. You don't have to even know the old password. Because that's what it means to be an administrator. So maybe that's the first thing you do is just see if you can log into those accounts. If you can, then move the data over somewhere safe, and then you can delete all those extra profiles.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Thank you.
Easy peasy. Yeah. Mac actually is pretty well structured around this because it's based on, oddly enough, a much older operating system called Unix. The Mac operating system, Mac OS operating system, it's kind of a long story, but it came from Apple had System 7, 8, and 9, remember that? And it was getting long in the tooth, and then they decided to buy Steve Jobs' company Next, which happened to have a very nice operating system, which was based on Unix, called Next Step. Apple said, let's just take this over, make this Mac OS. So really, Mac OS is Next Step, which is based on FreeBSD, or not even FreeBSD, just BSD. They call it Darwin. It has some significant modifications, especially to the user interface. But because it's based on a nice multi-user operating system from days gone by, it's actually pretty rational. Coffee time. I shall return. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888, Ask Leo, the phone number. On we go with line one, Ed in Lyle, Illinois. Hello, Ed.
Yeah, how are you doing this beautiful day?
I am doing wonderfully. Just got a cup of coffee. That made my day. What can I do for you? How are you doing?
Almost.
Almost? You're almost doing? All right.
Almost doing. I got one of these Wise cameras that you had on there.
Yeah, the Wise. There's two of them. There's the Wise Cam, and that's $20, and the Wise Cam Pan, which is $30.
The Pan one is the one I got.
Yeah.
Problem is, I don't have a smartphone.
Oh.
You can't use it without a smartphone.
No.
It makes a real nice paperweight.
I was not clear, apparently. Yes. There's no way to use it without a smartphone. It doesn't even have a web interface. So that's $30 down the tubes. I mean, you're not going to spend $1,000 to get a phone so you can control your $30 camera.
That's right.
Although you could get an old, you could do it on anything that ran iOS or Android. So there are cheap Android tablets that would probably run the software under $100. Every gas station sells them. They're not good tablets, but at least you could run the camera. Yeah, that is too bad. You have to have a smartphone. And I hope I said that. If I didn't, I apologize.
Can you run it off of a FreeBSD computer?
Is that what you have?
It's one of them that I have.
Oh, you're quite the geek, but you decided you didn't want a smartphone.
I had one, and it was so big it kept on falling out of my pocket. So yeah. I went back to a Verizon flip phone.
You and I are of a generation where these things are phones, but for anybody under 30, they're barely phones. They're really internet devices, communication devices, and cameras. The phone is just, you know, it's almost a vestigial feature of these things. And it's interesting. I mean, I think one of the ways WiseCam keeps the cost down is they have an app, but they don't have a big website that you can go to. I don't think that there's any way to log into it from the website. So without that, you can't use it on anything else. You need an iOS or an Android device. Now, I don't think you can do it on FreeBSD, but you might be able to. There are Android. Actually, this might work. There are Android emulators for desktop computers. The best known is BlueStacks, but I don't know if it'll run on FreeBSD. FreeBSD, so you're really computing on the edge here. FreeBSD is designed, for servers and things like that. It's probably the case that the WiseCam software connects to a FreeBSD-based computer, but no help at all. You need Android and iOS. Apparently, Wise is thinking of getting a desktop app. But if they did that, there'd be, then there'd be the issue of FreeBSD. If you can get BlueStacks running, WiseCam runs in BlueStacks. But I don't think there's a BlueStacks, a BlueStacks version for a FreeBSD. You can investigate. Look in your portage tree and see if there's something. Yeah. There may be other Android emulators. Wise does work, oddly enough, on BlueStacks. I'm looking on the Wise support forums. They say that there are some other Android emulators like Mi Duo, Duo S, which works. See if you can find an Android emulator in your portage tree, and if you can, then that might be the way to do it.
Yeah, I'll give it a try.
Yeah.
Hey, in Illinois, we have California beat in one thing.
What's that?
We're the highest taxed state in the union.
That is nothing to be proud of, is it?
I have a friend that has a house that was built right after World War II.
Yeah.
And he's paying over $12,000 a year tax on it.
Oh, we pay more than that. Yeah. They, at least in California, we had an initiative, Prop 13, to keep the property taxes low, but they get reassessed when you sell the house. So they figure out a way to get you. Hey, somebody's got to build the roads and set up schools and libraries. Somebody's got to do that.
Yeah.
At least you got great bratwurst.
No, you got to go up to Milwaukee.
Oh, okay. We might come out your way because my 15-year-old's a Green Bay Packers fan. And I'm thinking I'm not going to stay in Green Bay. We'll probably stay up the road a piece in Chicago or somewhere around there. Maybe come down for the game because our 49ers are playing the Packers in the fall. So I'll wave as I go by. Nice to talk to you, to Ed. I appreciate it. Kevin, Stockton, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm sorry. Is it Joe? No, it's Kevin. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
There you are. I'm great. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Tell my dogs are going to join in.
Hold on. Are you dogs fans? Hi, doggy. Oh, my gosh. How many do you have? It sounds like you might be in a kennel.
I have a few.
Are the dogs Mac or PC users? Android or iOS? What are their preferences?
I don't know. They like PCs, Windows 10.
Oh, they're all Windows. Okay, yeah. Yeah. What can I do for you?
So I have a problem with my web hosting company. I'm trying to move my domain name.
Yeah.
And they're also the domain registrar.
Yeah.
And
Let me guess. Is the name of this company, does it have anything to do with a father that is likes to go places?
No.
It's not GoDaddy. Okay.
No.
They're notorious for this.
Everything is fine until last year, and they stopped responding, and I want to...
What's the name of the registrar? What's the name of the registrar? Let's make sure they're alive.
Okay, it's called Net Basics, NetBasics.
Okay, so they're a web host, and they do register the domains. Are they the registrar of record is the question. So...
Yeah, that's what's on the who is.
So when you say, when you do a see a who is, it goes to NetBasics.
Yes.
Okay. But they're not responding to any emails or phone calls?
Email, phone call, or trouble tickets. The only thing they did, I was worried that I was going to lose my domain because it was up for renewal.
Yeah.
They did accept my credit card.
Oh, what a surprise. Okay.
Yeah, right.
So I see an 800 number. When you call that, nobody answers?
They answer and say their office hours are from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday.
Yeah.
But when you call during those hours, you get the same message.
Okay. So they're a tiny little company, and maybe they're not doing too well or whatever. So you have a little bit of a conundrum, but there are ways out of it. At any domain name registrar serves at the pleasure of ICANN, the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers. They kind of franchise these guys. You can at this point appeal to ICANN saying, I can't reach my registrar and I need to get my domain back. There may be a bit of a process involved. You have to, you know, understand that they don't want, there are people who hijack domains. So you really don't want to make it too easy to move a domain around. But if you can prove you own a domain, it's yours. You own it. It's registrar is just the person who took the registration. They do not own it. It is in your name. So go to ICANN, I-C-A-N-N, and you can submit a dispute and say, look, they've disappeared off the face of the earth. I want my domain back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So this is interesting. Boy, this is really interesting. So, I mean, their website is still up.
Oh, everything looks normal until you try to contact them.
When you do the, let me, what's the domain? Do you mind telling me the domain?
No, that's no problem.
Go ahead.
It's Kugaroo, KUGAROO.com.
Okay, let me look it up and see what, let me look at the who is on Kugaroo. And I'm going to the ICANN who is site to do this. So KUGAROO.
Yeah, Kugaroo.com.
.com. Okay, on here it says that Two Cows is the registrar. But that goes back to NetBasics. No, that's good news.
Oh, it is.
Yeah. Because Two Cows, so what happens is NetBasics is just a, really all they, it's ours as a web hosting company. And they registered on your behalf with Two Cows.
Okay.
So you need to go to twocowsdomains.com. They're good people. If you have any trouble, they're a sponsor through their Hover branch. It says registration service provider NetBasics. So go approach Two Cows and say, I can't reach NetBasics. This is my domain. I registered through them, but it's registered to Two Cows. So they're the one that ICANN said, you're the registrar. It's not NetBasics, but Two Cows. T-U-C-O-W-S. It used to stand for the Ultimate Collection of Windows Software.
But where that came from.
Yeah.
Yeah. That.
Remember that? Yeah, they used to have a site, and then they branched out. They do a lot of other things, but domains are a big business for them. I know them very well. So if you have any trouble at all, just email leo@techguylabs.com, and I will intercede on your behalf. But they're the registrar. So you contact them, and you say, hey, dudes, I bought this through NetBasics. Give them whatever information you can. I've renewed through NetBasics, but I can no longer reach them. I would like... And frankly, you could keep it at Hover. You just want control of it.
Yeah, I want to be able to move it to a new web host.
Yes. Yeah, clearly NetBasics is not a good web host. But
they were fine for 10 years.
Yeah. Well, you know what happens to these little guys? They come and go.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and he went. He got tired of it. So yeah. All they did is the domain registration is with two cows. All they did is they changed the DNS record to point to NetBasics.
Oh, that's what they did. Okay.
Yeah. So if you can log in, all you have to do is say, I want to log into my domain, and you just change the name server to somewhere else, and you're done.
Okay.
Bob's your uncle. Okay.
Excellent.
Good. I'm glad we could help.
Thank you so much.
Now, are you a kennel, or how many dogs do you have?
A lot.
Are you boarding them, or these are all yours?
These are mine. I do agility and sheep herding with them.
Oh, how cool! Are they Australians or?
I have mostly Australian shepherds.
Oh.
I have a border collie.
Oh.
And a couple of Berger Picards.
I really want an Australian shepherd. They are such great dogs. They're so smart.
Oh, they're wonderful. Don't get me started.
Well, maybe we'll come visit you and pick one up.
Well,
they're not for sale. They're my dogs, he says. Hey, it was great to talk to you, Kevin. I'm glad to see that this is on file with two cows because that's an easy one to solve.
Good. Well, I'm feeling much, much better now.
Yeah, get your domain back.
Okay.
All right, take care.
Thanks, Leo.
My pleasure. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. I spent a little more time talking with Kevin about his domain issue. This is a really good lesson for everyone. There are two different services here. There's a service, a domain registrar, that you go to and you say, I want this domain. Our domain, techguylabs.com, is an example. I want to buy a domain with a specific name. The registrar is licensed by the global organization called ICANN, I-C-A-N-N. For a long time, ICANN was run by the United States Department of Commerce, but they gave it up a couple of years ago, as they should, because no one government should control the internet. It should be non-governmental. And so ICANN now is run mostly Americans on the board, but it's run internationally. They're in charge of the numbering system for servers that makes the internet work. There really is a fundamental core of the internet. They run the big phone books, the domain name system, the domain name servers, the 13 canonical domain name servers that have every web address that exists is in these phone books, and they run them. Then they license registrars to take money and to add somebody's, you don't really own a domain name. You just lease it. You buy it. You rent it for as long as you continue to pay the fee. Fees range from $10 a year to hundreds of dollars a year for some custom domains. Some countries charge more. Libya charges more for the .ly because people like .ly, that kind of thing. You've seen all. But the .com, the .net, the .us domains, all of those should be around $10 a year. Shouldn't be expensive. You go to a registrar, somebody licensed by ICANN, and you say, I want that domain name. They say, yeah, it's available. Give us $10, we'll register it for you. They become an intermediary. Then they're running a domain name server that you can log into and say, and this is where I want that domain to go. This is where my website is. And that can be with another company. It's not unusual. You go to somebody like GoDaddy that's both a registrar and a web hosting company that you'll do both services at one company. But it is not required by any means, and maybe it's a little more flexible. And you're a little more protected if it's two different companies. Because then you can deal with the appropriate company to make the changes. For instance, techguylabs.com is registered with a Canadian company called Two Cows. Hover.com is their registrar, their sponsor, Hover.com. So I went to them. I bought techguylabs.com, our website name. But it's hosted by another company. So what I have to do, if I want to move my website around, and that's what Kevin wanted to do, if I want to move my website around, I go to hover.com, the registrar, and I modify the domain name entry. I say, from now on, this information will be maintained by the hosting company. That way, when somebody goes to a domain name, they go to the big phone books and look it up, it points to my server at this hosting company. But the registrar is still the one that owns that name, or maintains that name on my behalf. I'm renting it from them. If I want to point to another hosting company, I go to the registrar, not the hosting company. I can say, well, I want somebody else to host it now, including GoDaddy. You can go to a register. You know, GoDaddy's a registrar, but also host. I can have a hover.com domain name, go there and have it point to a website at GoDaddy. That's fine. So the key is, and you can find this out by doing something called a whois lookup. If you Google whois, you'll see that there are places you can go. You type in a domain name, and you'll get all the information about that domain name. Who owns it, phone number, address, all that's public record, by the way. Who the registrar of record is. And that's what I did with our caller. I simply went to his domain name registration, looked it up, and I found that, oh, you know who the registrar was? It's not NetBasics. It's a company called Two Cows out of Toronto. And the good news is they're in business. They'll answer the phone. You call them, as long as you can prove it, you don't want a domain name squatter to take your name, right? You have to prove you own it. But once you prove you own it, they'll say, okay, great. Here's the login. Here's how you change where it's pointing. You want to change a web host? No problem. You log in to Two Cows, change it there, and then your site moves to wherever you've pointed it. It's a complicated system. It works very well, obviously, but it can be a little bewildering for people who say, well, I went to this company and they set up a website for me. Well, they did, but they did all this on your behalf. The only risk, and this is something to be very aware of, if you go to a website hosting company, you say, I want a website, they say, great, what name do you want? And you say the name, techguylabs.com, and they say, all right, great, and they buy it for you. If they buy it, not you, they own it. And unfortunately, a lot of unscrupulous web hosts will do this because now you're locked in. You can't go to the domain registrar and say, I want my name back. You don't own it. They do. They registered it on your behalf, but they didn't register it in your name. So you want to make sure that that you own it, not the web hosting company, not the guy who built your website. We get so many calls from people who say, I had a guy build my website. Now he's disappeared. I want my website back. Well, if it's all in his name, there's not a lot you can do about it. So make sure when you get somebody to do your website, you register the domain name, you have the login to the registrar, you have the login to the web host company, and you keep that, you maintain that. You don't, maybe he needs it for time being, but you want to own it. You want them to know you. You want them to have your phone number and your address and your name on record so that if the guy absconds and says bye-bye, you can call him up and say, hey, he's disappeared. I need to change my password because I can't get in because he changed it. And as long as you can prove you're you, that should be fine. Make sure you own what you think you own. Joe in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hello, Joe.
Good afternoon here. So, did you do field day? My call is KG4UJC.
Oh, I don't do it, but W6TWT, it's great to talk to you. I'm too busy working. But I look forward. You know what? The number one thing I want to do in retirement is all of that stuff. Go to the hamvention and go to field day and really get active again because I love the ham community.
Yeah. Well, my issue that I'm having is we care for my wife and I and my sons. We've got my parents and her parents we all care for. Her mom's living with us, and my parents are still on their own, but I have caretakers during the week. But my mom's bad about putting a cordless phone in her robe or in the chair with her, and she'll move and she'll bump it off hook. So when I try to call over at night before they go to bed to see if they need anything, the line's busy, but the phone's off hook. So I have to drive over there and hang up the phone. And... yeah, it's happened. I've had it happen every night in a week in a row before. And so I've looked around, hadn't seen anything or found anything online, but I think I came up with a solution, and I've wired up a prototype. I haven't actually connected it to a phone line yet, but I've been playing with these Wemos D1 Mini.
There you go.
Modules.
Yep.
And the relay shield.
Yep.
And I've got one set up here at the house right now, assigned to using my SSID and the login for my router here at the house. And I can go to my local IP address and be able to toggle the relay off.
Perfect.
So I'm going to look at putting that in series.
That's
with their
brilliant.
Phone
lines. So you turn the phone off and on again, and it'll hang it up.
Yeah, and I've got a camera over there at my parents' house. So I can keep an eye on them, and
that's a good son. That is a brilliant solution. I bet you we could think of a few more, but I think that's a really good one. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I love that idea. So you're basically unplugging the phone remotely.
Yeah, what I was going to do is chop the phone line, drop the phone line connection.
Yep.
I haven't tried with dropping the power to the base unit and see if that will make the remote unit hang up. I need to play with that because I've got a cordless phone here at the house, but I haven't done that yet.
I think it might because it's a cordless, but, right? If it were like one of those old Western Electric phones and it was just off the hook, that's physical. There's no way to fix that. But because it's a cordless phone, I think cycling the power would probably do it.
Yeah, they have, they've got three hardwired phones in the house, and I need to get some better ones because they're old Western Electric, Bell South.
Yep, stuff. And if they put those, take those off the hook, there's nothing you can do. You're stuck.
The hard problem is they've got AT&T U-verse, and U-verse routers are crap.
Oh, right? I know, they're awful.
Opening ports up through.
Yep.
They don't make any logical sense at all.
No.
Through work, I deal with Comcast routers all the time because I do surveillance cameras installations. We have to open up about a half a dozen.
Oh, so you have some experience on this. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I've got some interesting sites I have camera access to here at my house. So, so it's funny watching college kids come home after.
Oh, Lord.
Partying in the condos.
Oh, Lord.
Story elevators, do all sorts of
man.
Stuff.
Oh, man. Yeah. No wonder they have cameras.
Oh, yeah. The AT&T routers, though, they're so strange in their configuration, and their bandwidth is not great anyway.
You have to do that, unfortunately, because the way U-verse works, you can't replace it with your own router.
Yeah.
The other way you could do it is you could give them a cheap cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
That would also ring, and like an emergency backup cell phone, and just put it somewhere. And they can't, take that off the hook. They just would sit there and then it would ring and you go, Mom, you did it again, Mom.
Yeah. The other option I looked at is doing something like a magic jack or something like that. But then they have to put up with, well, even with a cell phone, they end up with telemarketing calls. I've got a brand new cell phone from the new
job. Isn't
that
terrible?
And I'm already getting telemarketing calls.
Yeah.
Of course, I have fun with it. I answer county morgue. Is this for a body delivery or a pickup?
I got to try that one.
I have fun with telemarketing calls.
Oh, I love it. Oh, I love it.
The best one was some girl called for a guy one day, and I said, well, he's out on a date right now with so-and-so. I must have picked. I must have picked the wrong name for the girl
boy.
He was out with.
Oh, boy.
I hear this scream. He says he wasn't seeing her
that
anymore.
Son of a... Oh, now you caused some trouble, my friend.
Somebody's in hot water.
Hey, it's great to talk to you. I got to run, but I appreciate the call. I think your Wemo idea is brilliant.
Yeah, they're fun to play with. Little modules that do quite a bit. So
yeah.
Have a good day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, augmented reality. You know, everything with a chip in it, all this technology that's changing our world, sometimes for good, sometimes for ill. One of my colleagues tweeted yesterday, can we just invent some technology that's not evil? And I thought, well, I don't think technology per se is good or evil. I mean, it can be used in good ways and evil ways. Is the internet good or evil? Are cars good or evil? Is the zipper good or evil? Well, it's handy if, you want to take your clothes off. It's evil if you get anything caught in it. But it doesn't by itself. Very few technologies have a bias in one direction or the other. Even nuclear weapons, which you could probably say, well, a nuclear weapon's evil. But yeah, but weapons, aren't inherently evil. They can be used to prevent war. In fact, I think you could make a strong case that we haven't had a world war since the invention of a nuclear weapon because everybody's afraid somebody will use them. Now, I'm not sure that the world is a better place because somebody invented nuclear weapons, and I know that the inventors of the nuclear weapons, including Dr. Robert Oppenheimer, immediately regretted it. But you can make a strong case that it's neither good nor evil. It's just technology. So I think if we're going to talk about it on this show, I don't want to be a cheerleader. It's not all great. Look at kids walking around, families, whole families, entire villages, entire countries walking around staring at a screen all the time. Now, it's really cool that you can put in your pocket a powerful computer, the equivalent of a you know, mainframe computer in your pocket that's always connected to the outside world. That's amazing. That is truly revolutionary. I think we really take it for granted. The smartphone is a miracle. GPS is a miracle by itself, and it's got that, and it's got a great camera, and it's got the internet. I mean, it's a miracle. And of course, it can, you know, sometimes we spend too much time staring at it, especially if you just walked into a tree, you might say that. So it's neither here nor there. It is, however, I think, something we need to pay attention to and try to use it in the right way. Try to be thoughtful about, I guess that's the word I want to use, thoughtful about it. And that's what this show's about. How technology can bite you, but also how technology can be used to make your life better. And then, in a way, that's always what I wanted to do. The day I started doing this, and that was back 27 years ago, I started doing a call-in show about, at the time, it was about DOS. A little bit of Windows thrown in. And Macintosh, because Mac came out in 84. I started doing this in the early 90s. But I always thought, well, I want people to understand how to use technology to defend themselves, in effect. Because I knew big companies and governments would start using technology against us in some ways. Look how face recognition is being used, I think, in some ways against us. City of London just installed cameras everywhere. You know, it's England's famous for having cameras everywhere. London, there's probably no time you're on the streets of London that you're not being surveilled by more than one camera. They recently set up a face recognition system in London, trying to find bad guys. They went through all the pictures of all the faces of everybody walking the streets in London. That by itself is a little scary. But the funny thing is, they didn't find any bad guys. It didn't work. Well, wait, I take it back. One guy was arrested. He was falsely identified as being a criminal. In fact, it was a little bit of a problem because the police didn't say, are you this guy? They said, you are this guy because, hey, computers are never wrong. And unfortunately, the guy got a little bit hassled inappropriately because he wasn't the bad guy. So face recognition, we know it doesn't do a very good job because of the way it's trained. It doesn't do a very good job with people of color, which should scare you if you're African-American. That should terrify you. You don't want police all over the place using these face recognition and falsely identifying you as a criminal. They already do that anyway. If you're dark in this country, they already do that anyway. Now they're going to have, this is the real problem. The computer said, you're the guy. And we all have, many of us have this false faith in technology. Oh, that's the computers. How many times have you been online with an airline reservation? Well, the computer said, the computer isn't wrong, can never be wrong, right? We just assume it's a computer. It can't be wrong. 8888, ask Leo the phone number. Computers, I'm here to tell you, are often wrong. Often wrong. Maybe not as wrong as humans, not as often as humans, but they're often wrong. Because guess what? That computer was set up by a human. Bob in Connecticut, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Bob.
Yes. Good
Welcome.
Afternoon, sir.
Yes. Good to talk to you.
Yeah. The reason I'm calling, actually, a couple of things. My wife and I've always been a Motorola freak. So, you know.
You're a Motorola what? Creep?
I'm a Motorola freak.
Oh, freak.
In 25 years, we own cell phones and...
Nothing wrong with that. They invented the cell phone, you know.
Yes, I know. But who owns them now?
Well, I'm sad to say. Motorola, a great company. It was in Chicago-based. It was a legendary American technology company. In fact, did you know then where the name Motorola came from, if you're a Motorola freak?
No, I don't.
They made record players for cars.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Before there were radios in cars. Yes. For a very brief period of time, for obvious reasons, people drove around with record players.
I know.
In their car. Because you got to have music when you drive, and that didn't work so well. But Motorola, Victrola, right? So they were making Victrolas for automobiles. They soon found better things. They made radios. They invented the cell phone. They were in Chicago. Google bought them briefly. I don't know if you remember this. Google owned Motorola for a while.
Right. They still don't.
No, they, you know, a couple of years in, it was actually kind of a big boondoggle. This is not unusual in technology work. They bought Motorola for $12.5 billion in 2012, 2011. $12.5 billion they paid. They sold it for less than three.
Uh-oh.
And they sold it to, are you ready? Sit down, this great American company, to a Chinese company called Lenovo.
Oh, yes. I've heard of...
That's who's making your Motorola phones now. Now, for a long time, the Chicago group was still designing and building the phones. They were building it in China, but it was on their design. And they were still great, the Motorola G2, 3, 4. The latest Moto phones, the new X that just came out, which I think is a great phone, and the G, what is it, 6 now? They're still great phones, but they're now being designed not in Chicago. They've moved the whole team to China. So I wonder, you know, I have to say Lenovo's done a good job with another company they bought, another old American company. Remember the IBM ThinkPad? Lenovo bought that brand. They make ThinkPads. Yeah. And they've been good stewards, I think, of the ThinkPad brand. So
that's good.
Let's hope they do the same with Motorola.
Right, right. Now, my wife and I, we have twin phones. We on Christmas Day, they had a one-day special where you could get the, you know, update your phone for $50.
Oh, that's so cute. So you have twinsy phones. Which ones do you have?
So bad. I just felt so bad. We both have the Droid Turbo Ballistic Nylon 64 gig RAM.
Okay, so this is an unholy alliance between Motorola and Verizon.
Right.
And I don't use the word unholy lightly here, but okay. Are you happy with those phones?
We love the phones. My wife's phone, of course, she doesn't have all the garbage I have on mine. But I mean, after, I think, 2.5-3 years, it still runs like a Swiss watch.
Good.
My phone, unfortunately, I'm one of those guys for, I don't need any protection. Usually because I was always used to holsters, you know. And of course.
Well, you know, and you bought that thing is ballistic nylon. It's supposed to be tough.
Yeah. Well, what happened was, when I like I said, I've dropped it 100 times, and it was always fine. I put a hairline crack in the. Yeah. You know,
the screen is always the most. There's no way you can get around this. You got a big piece of glass in the front. Every phone is horrible there. There's nothing you can do about that.
But what it did is that the left speaker doesn't really work. So that must have, you know, because it fell in that area.
Okay.
So I'm going like, okay. Somebody says, well, you know, there's a way you can boost the volume on your phone, you know, like whatever.
Maybe
you
it's time for a new phone. How long have you had that $50 device? Come on.
Yeah, I was thinking that.
I got to take a break. Hang on. We'll talk about the new crop of phones because there's some really nice Android devices out there still. Not having the left speaker, it's not the end of the world, but maybe it's time. Do you want a new phone? Maybe I made that up.
Well, I mean, I'd love to get another one of these, but, you know, it's a Shurian, and I remember working in a casino for, you know, a long time, table games. I mean, I heard horror stories from people who got, you know, replacements.
Yeah, I wouldn't get a Droid at this point.
Really?
Yeah. You can get a Motorola. The new Motorola Z3 just came out. And that's listed as $500, but you might get a better deal if you go to Verizon. I don't even know if Verizon's still doing the Droid brand. I think they might have dropped that. If you want to save a little more, Motorola makes a G6, which starts at $250, and that's an excellent phone. And now, it's not going to be, you know, ballistic nylon. Not that that helped you in any way, did it?
No. Unless I catch a bullet in the egg.
Yeah, maybe if it hits that right there. It's like the Bible. You just can hope the bullet hits the middle.
Right. Yeah.
I would, on any modern smartphone, get a case and just, and then mainly don't drop it.
Yeah. Is the wraparound that goes around the edge the best one?
I get OtterBox. If you really, I make my kids buy OtterBoxes because they have, I have,
OtterBox.
Yeah, I don't drop phones. I actually often carry phones around without a case. But of course, I'm always changing phones. So if I dropped it, it wouldn't be the end of the world. But my kids, who I don't want to buy them another phone for a year, I make them use an OtterBox. And the nice thing about OtterBox is some of them have a lid on them, so it'll protect the front as well as the back.
Oh.
And those things are they're as mil-spec as anything. That makes your phone a tough phone. They're big.
Right.
Truthfully, when I get a case, I usually spend $5 and just get a clear rubber case that goes around the back.
Right.
And that'll give you as much protection as anything if you drop it anywhere but the screen. And then, and like I said, the screen is always vulnerable on any phone because glass is glass. You can call it Gorilla Glass or Baboon Glass or whatever you want, but if you drop it on a rock, it's bye-bye glass.
Yeah, adios.
Adios glass.
Right.
So, you're maybe do a new phone. Losing the left speaker is not the end of the world, but maybe, you know, it's time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was thinking about it. My question was I can go online and get an unlocked phone, which the rep at Verizon wasn't very pleased.
No. You know. You know why? Because you could go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you're still limited due to the CD.
Not really. If you get a modern unlocked phone, it'll work on any network, including the Verizon.
Oh. Because
Verizon's moving to LTE. Everybody's using LTE now. So,
I see.
Yeah. Of course, they don't like that because the lock is what we call a carrier lock. It says you may only use this phone with the company you got it from.
But, right.
You know, yeah, and technically, they're supposed to offer unlock. And actually, Verizon, because they have a consent decree with the FCC some years ago, they do not typically lock the LTE slot. So, really, you know, when people buy an iPhone, for instance, I often say, get it from Verizon because it's not locked. You can use it on any carrier. So probably if you bought it from Verizon, it wouldn't matter. But if you want to get it unlocked, that's fine, too.
Yeah, I was just curious. See, I love a heavy phone.
You want it to be heavy? Well, good luck. Because phone manufacturers these days are going the other way, you know?
Yeah, right. I'll make this one real quick. Security.
Well, if you're talking security, I have to be blunt. And I use Android phones and I love them. They're not as secure as iPhones. Plain and simple.
Right. I've heard that.
Yeah. When I talk to my friends who are in security, when they go to the hacker conventions, they wouldn't go close with an Android phone. They just know there's too many holes. You're not a target, so probably you're safe. It's not like somebody's, you know, going after you. If you do get a you want to get an Android phone that's secure, either get the Google Pixel phone, because Google keeps that up to date. That's fully secure. Or a Samsung, the Knox. Now, Samsung has other security issues. In fact, last week, the newest Samsung, the Galaxy S9, randomly was sending pictures, just your pictures out to random contacts.
So, yeah, I heard about that.
I don't know if that's a security flaw, but it ain't good.
No.
So maybe stick with the Google Pixel phone. You know, and that's why it's a shame Google gave up on Motorola. They recently acquired most of the engineering staff from HTC. So I expect Google phones to continue to be very, very good. In fact, the newest Pixel, the Pixel 3, which will be out in probably 3 months, all the rumors point to it being a really sweet phone. But if price is an object, because these are expensive, $850 from Verizon. If price is an object, look at the Moto G6. That's a very nice phone. And they do all the updates. It's just not quite as secure as an iPhone. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. Chris Marquardt, photo guy, coming up. It's time once again for a visit to our professional photographer, Chris Marquardt. He's our photo guy. You'll find his work and his workshops at discoverthetopfloor.com, and you'll find him here almost every Sunday talking about photography. Hello, Chris.
Hey, how are you doing?
Sorry about Germany in the World Cup.
Oh, I never watch football or soccer.
What?
It doesn't affect me in the least. I'm very sorry to say
that. It's funny because America is not exactly a soccer nation. But I think we get the bug every 4 years during the World Cup cycle.
I don't know. I just don't get that sports thing. I don't know why, but it's just not in me.
Like any good geek, sport ball just eludes you, right? Yeah, I understand.
I just wish they'd give everyone on the field their own ball, and then they didn't have to fight for it.
You're all winners. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's what made America great. So let's talk photography.
Yeah, let's talk photography. Let's talk healing. This is not a religious thing. We're talking about healing things in photos.
I need this because I took a picture of my wife that I think is beautiful, but she said, you're going to have to do some retouching on that because I have crow's feet. I said, but those are smile lines. She said, yeah, so you're going to fix it, right? So how can I do that?
Well, I want to talk about one tool in specific, and it's called the cloning brush or the healing brush. And you'll find this in almost every photo editing software. I use Lightroom, so that's what I'm using as an example, but you'll find it in other tools. And it's pretty much to fix blemishes. Like you have a spot somewhere, you might have some dust on your sensor, and you get a blotch in the sky that looks weird. Or let's say you're in real estate and you want to sell your house and you take the photo of the house and there's the beautiful lawn, but there's like one hole in the lawn where the grass is dried.
Yeah.
You want to fill that to make it look a bit nicer.
Yeah.
So that's what we do with the cloning tool. We clone something from somewhere in the photo onto another place. And that tool usually comes in two versions. It comes as the clone tool and it comes as the healing tool.
Is there a difference?
There's a difference. The clone tool takes the source. So there's always a source and a destination. You always take from somewhere and put it somewhere else, and it's usually a round selection. But the clone tool just takes that source and puts it onto the selection, and that's it. While the healing brush, when you switch that brush to healing mode, it will do the same, but it will adjust the brightness and the color to the destination. And that is really helpful if you want to clone something over from something that has different light on it or that has just slightly different color, which is very normal in photos. And it just makes it a bit easier. And if you try this on a little dust bunny in the sky, you click it and it's gone pretty much. So it's really very, very seamless.
That's a great use for it because every once in a while I have a dust on my lens or something. Or actually, I guess it's on the sensor and it looks like
I do this all the time. Before I bring that in for servicing, for cleaning the sensor, I'll try to drag this out as long as I can and just take care of those couple of spots in the sky this way. So the cloning point, you can change the size of that. In Lightroom, it's the middle mouse wheel, and that makes it bigger or smaller. It also has a feathered edge. So it's not you can have it with a hard edge, but you can also kind of soften the edge, and you can change that, I think, by holding the shift key while turning the mouse wheel. And depending on the application, you have to try which one works better. The nice thing in Lightroom is this is a non-destructive change because you can go back and just either delete those points or you can move them around. So if you didn't like hit the spot perfectly, you can just grab that with the mouse and drag it around, both for the source and the destination. And you can even go really detailed. If you want to be very precise, you can even just click on one of the selections and then use the cursor keys on your keyboard and just nudge it back and forth, up and down, left and right. So
that's the conceptually always the difficult thing for me to understand. When I'm using the clone tool, there's two dots. One's on the thing I'm fixing. And
you click on the destination. You click on the thing you want to fix, and Lightroom is going to make a guess from where it wants to take that.
So it's kind of copying the color, the image underneath the second dot onto the first dot.
Right. And it tries to guess where to put that source dot, where the stuff comes from. And if it gets it wrong, you can hit the slash key, so it makes a new selection. If that's still wrong, just grab it with the mouse and drag it where you want it.
I like that slash key thing. Now, but, you know, you don't have to have the fancy tool Lightroom, because Snapseed, which a lot of people use, has
most
that.
Most tools do that,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Okay.
It's just the one I'm used to and the one I use every day, so... but for those out there who use Lightroom, there here are two additional tricks that I come to really enjoy. And one is, just imagine you want to take out, let's say you have an electrical wire in the sky, in a straight line, and if you, it doesn't have to be a round selection, you can kind of paint that selection as well. So you can drag that cursor over that wire and make a long selection this way. And that's helpful, but making a straight line is even easier. And the way you do this is, again, this is in Lightroom. I don't know what other tools do, but if you click on the beginning, just make a dot on the beginning, and then while holding the shift key, click at the end of that line, it will make a line for you. It will make a straight line for you. And this way, if you have, like, let's say a lamppost or something that you want to clone out of a photo, this would be the way to do that. And you know how sometimes those dust bunnies that make spots in the sky, how they are not like, they don't always have a hard edge. They're sometimes hard to see and kind of, they have fuzzy edges and they're not that dark. There's another tool built in, it's called Visualize Spots. And if you're in that clone tool.
This always bugs me. The names they choose make no sense at all.
I know. No, they make no sense at all. The keyboard shortcut is even weirder, because the keyboard shortcut for Visualize Spots is A for whatever reason.
You're doing the opposite of visualizing spots.
Well, what you do with that tool is this whole picture changes into this weird black and white strange photo, and it kind of enhances some edges. It almost looks like Terminator vision. But interestingly enough, you will easily be able to spot those dust spots in the sky. You can see them straight away.
Okay. Yeah.
And you can even work in that mode. You can even clone in that mode. So this is kind of the straight line trick. Click on the first one, then shift click on the end of that line, and it will make a straight line. And the second one is Visualize Spots with the A key. Will help you find those dust bunnies.
So that's a good... I've never knew about that tool. I'll have to remember that one.
That I use this almost all the time. It's really, really good helper.
I had a little speck on one of my sensors for much of a trip, and then when we were in Japan, and I looked at my pictures, and I didn't see it until I looked at the sky, and there's all these...
Yep.
And I thought, oh, man, they're ruined! So healing and cloning helped get rid of them, and now I know to find them, Visualize Spots.
Mm-hmm.
That's unique to Lightroom, though. I don't think you see that in a lot of.
I don't think anyone else is doing that. Unfortunately, I wish all the others did the same thing.
Yeah, it's a good tool.
We need more choice for sure.
There's still reasons to spend money and get Lightroom.
Yeah, but let's wait. There are a couple of companies coming into the game, trying to take some of that cake. So we'll see. I think within the next 6 to 12 months, we'll see some strong competition coming up.
Good. And let us know, because it's not that I don't like Lightroom, but it's slow.
I'm following that very well.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind an alternative. Chris Marquardt is our inspiration. We're doing a photo assignment, by the way. Take a picture illustrating the word or the concept hands, and then upload it to our Tech Guy group on Flickr. What do you think? A couple more weeks?
Yeah, probably a couple more weeks. The eyes assignment.
Oh, not hands. Eyes.
No, eyes. Eyes.
Oh, man. I've been taking pictures of hands all week. Okay, eyes. Find Chris at discoverthetopfloor.com. 8888-ASK. Leo, the phone number. We go on to Darwin in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. Hello, Darwin.
Hello, Leo. How are you today?
I am wonderful. Welcome.
Excellent. Thank you. I have a couple of things I want to talk to you about. First thing, I remember recently hearing you talk about that iPhone that the FBI in California was trying to crack for so long, and they were finally able to get into it by using a brute force.
That's right.
Do you know what program they used?
They never said. No one ever said. So this was the one, the tragedy in San Bernardino, the husband and wife who killed many, many people at the place they worked. The FBI I mean, they already got the shooters, but the FBI wanted to see if anybody else was involved. And there was a secondary phone. They had erased their primary phone, but there was a secondary iPhone. FBI couldn't unlock it. It had a four-digit code on it. Went to Apple. Apple said, no, we're not going to unlock it for you. To do so, well, the FBI wanted them to write special software. And they said the problem with that is if we write this special software that unlocks his phone, it really poses a security risk for every other iPhone user. The FBI had taken them to court, eventually withdrew the case, saying, well, we figured out how to unlock it anyway. No one knows how. FBI won't say. We do know that we believe they spent more than $1 million to do it. And my guess, most people's guess, is they went to an Israeli firm called Cellebrite that claims to have ways to unlock them. They're older phones, though, not newer phones. So it was a phone with a four-digit code. All the new iPhones require six digits, which is considerably harder to unlock. And while companies like Cellebrite still claim that they can get into these phones, it's usually by taking advantage of a loophole, a bug, a flaw. And as soon as Apple finds these, they patch them. The most recent one, people were able to use the Lightning port with a locked phone and use hardware that would take all the software off the phone and then at their leisure try to break into it. Apple recently, most recent update of iOS 11, turned that feature off. If a phone has not been unlocked within an hour, the Lightning port ceases to be available for data transfer. So this is Apple working constantly, much to the dismay of law enforcement, to lock that phone down. Now, I have to say, law enforcement says this is terrible. You know, we can't get crooks anymore because they're using encryption. They're using they're using hardware that we can't get into. The truth of the matter, I believe, is that technology has allowed law enforcement amazing abilities to spy on us all the time. They have, in effect, a big screen TV that they can see everything that's going on. There's a few little dots, a few little things they can't get into, like your smartphone. But that doesn't mean that they can't see your location at all times, that there aren't cameras everywhere. There are plenty of ways to surveil you. There's no evidence at all that law enforcement has fewer ways to surveil you. There's lots of evidence they have more ways. So I don't worry that they aren't going to catch bad guys. And I do believe that our smartphones need to be protected, not from law enforcement, but from bad guys. And anything that a company like Apple does to make it easier for law enforcement always ultimately makes it easier for bad guys. So I applaud Apple. They're not trying to keep your phone safe from law enforcement. They're trying to keep your phone safe, period. All right, end of sermon.
I'd had a relative that had passed away recently, and she had a iPad Air 2. We were trying to get into that. We don't know what her Apple password is for it. So.
There is no way to get into it without Apple's help. But
will
if you
Apple, help us?
Apple will help you if you can prove you own it. So if you can find the receipt for it, that kind of thing, and you explain what happened, Apple can get into it. They're the only company that can.
Okay. Well, that'll work.
Yeah. So you go to the Apple store. You say, here's the proof of ownership. It was my sister's. She's passed away. Here's proof of relationship. You know, and I can't promise you that they'll help you. But this is they do this so that somebody can't steal your phone or your iPad, erase it, and reuse it. But they may be able to now. Actually, but you want the data on it, or you just want the iPad?
We just want the data that's on it. Actually,
data might be harder. This is where Apple says no, we can't get into it. But they have ways. For instance, if your sister set it up, as most people have, to automate. By the way, I'm sorry about your sister. My condolences. If your sister set it up, as many have, to automatically back up to iCloud, then Apple can give you the data. In fact, that's what they told the FBI. They said, you dummies, you kept trying to unlock the phone. If you had merely taken the phone back to the bad guy's house, it would have backed up to the iCloud, and then we could have given you all his data. Now, you're not law enforcement, so I don't know what the rules are about giving you the data from iCloud, but they do have access to that. That is not hidden from them. So there may be ways. It's certainly worth contacting them and explaining the situation.
I'll go to the local Apple store and see if they can't help me. Yeah. And I have one just a couple miles from my house.
You might want to bring, if you have a death certificate, identifying information about purchase. Of course, your identifying information. The more documentation you have, the better.
Yes.
So okay. Sorry.
I'll give that a shot and see what we can
okay.
do. I got one more question for you.
Yes, sir.
If we have time.
Yes, sir.
Plex.
Yeah.
Big lover of Plex. Wonderful program. What I would like to know is there a legal way that you know of to?
I almost can complete that sentence and say no, but go ahead. Anytime somebody says, "Is there a legal way?"
Well, you know, DVDs, you know, are copyrighted and they're protected.
So
and,
you know, you want to put your DVDs on your Plex server? Is that what you want to do?
I do.
Yeah. So technically, it's not legal. Technically, because we have really a draconian copyright law, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, that makes it illegal to reverse engineer copy protection. However, there's no judge in the land that would ever get you in trouble, convict you, fine you for taking copies of DVDs you own and putting them on a hard drive. You're not selling it. You're not putting it on a blanket in your back lawn. Saying, come on, we got your DVDs here, hot DVDs. You're not doing that. So it's technically illegal. However, there are plenty of ways to do it. You could start with a program called Handbrake, free from handbrake.fr. And in order to rip a DVD with Handbrake, you also need a program. Both of these are free and not illegal. Called VLC, the Video Land Client. You get that from videoland.org. So you need those two programs, VLC, which is a media player, and Handbrake, which is a media ripper. Handbrake says, you got to open this DVD with VLC for me to see it. What happens is the DVD gets unlocked by the media player, VLC, and is then and then the key is in memory, and then Handbrake says, oh, fine, it's unlocked, I can rip it. Then it makes a file that's perfect for Plex. You can do it two ways. Plex will play it back. I believe Plex will play it back with the menus and all the extras. Or you could just say, I just want the movie. That'll save you some space. It'd be about a gigabyte for a two-hour movie. Put that on the hard drive, and Plex will play it just fine. There are lots of other rippers. That's just one. But Handbrake's free, and VLC's free. There's companies that make ones that... Blu-ray's a little tougher if it's a Blu-ray disc. Then you're going to need something a little more powerful than Handbrake. It used to be a company called, I think it was Sly Ferret, made a program, a DVD ripper program, but they got in trouble. Even though they were offshore, they were in Trinidad, because it is illegal. They were in Trinidad and Tobago. But I think that they're back making Blu-ray rippers. A little Googling, you'll be able to find it. don't sell it. Don't. Yeah, don't rip. DVDs are easy.
Yeah, Larry, I mean, there's lots of programs out there to rip them. I just wanted to know if there was any legal way, if you own the DVD, to rip it and put it on your Plex Media server, because I think DVDs take a massive amount of space.
Yeah.
So I have like 10,000 of them.
It's technically illegal. No one's ever been prosecuted for it because you own it. And in fact, you could make a strong case that this is a legal and fair backup copy of something you already own.
Sure.
They go after the people who are selling it or distributing on BitTorrent, things like that. That's who's going to get in trouble. If you're doing it for your own personal use, it's only technically illegal. It is not in any way unethical, immoral, or wrong. DVD Fab, by the way, that's the one a lot of people like for Blu-ray. DVD Fab, that's $65.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that one, too.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Yeah, there's no legal way to do it just because the DMCA says you can't bypass copy protection, and these are all copy protected. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Actually, you're right, Scooter X. I should mention this Voodoo system and these other systems. I don't know if... Oh, I'm sorry, Steve. That's a nightmare. Poor Steve. Uh, Vudu will take an in-home disc and make it digital. Do you have to have... Wow. Wow. $2 per... $5 per... Oh, but this is only if they... Okay, so... So what Vudu's doing, this isn't illegal because they aren't scanning it, converting it, and watching it. What you're just doing is seeing if they have that movie in their library, and then they're giving you a discount on it. They're not really ripping it. That's how they get away with it. And it won't work if they don't have it already in their library. Right, so if it's a movie that Vudu doesn't offer, scan, convert, and watch. Yeah, so search for movies available for disc to digital conversion. That merely means it's a movie they own. What movie can you not get on Vudu? Can you get Star Wars? I think you can get that on Vudu. Let's see. Hello? Well, my search doesn't even work. Yeah. You're watching them instantly because they have it. They own it. This is just a discount because Sky Bandits? You can't get Sky Bandits? All right. Let's see if Vudu has Sky Bandits. I have the Sky Bandits disc. Can I get it? Well, the search doesn't even work, so I can't even use it. Yeah, because it's not ripping them. It's just giving you a discount. Search blocked by the man. All right, I'm going to take a walk. I shall return. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. We're talking about computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz, 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number, 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada outside that area. Oh, it's okay. You can still call. You just have to use VoIP, voice over internet, something like Skype to call, and that way it won't cost you anything, and you can stay on hold for hours, as many of our callers today have. I apologize. I'm going to get right to you right now. Let's start with line four. Ben in Memphis, Tennessee. Hello, Ben. Thanks for your patience.
Hey, Leo. Good talking to you. Thanks.
Thank you. What can I do for you?
I've got a Drobo 5N.
Yes, sir.
That is serving up network attached storage on my network.
Yep.
Been running a couple of years, running fine. All of my PCs and laptops are running Windows 10 1803.
Uh-oh.
And they up to this point have all been upgraded in place. So I've just been, you know, going from 1703 to 1709 to 1803. Everything's fine. One of the PCs, actually it's the ThinkPad, was having problems, and I suspected software. Turned out it wasn't, but that's out of the side of the point. So I did a Windows reset on it, a complete clean reset, back to cold metal and back up. Now it won't connect to the Drobo.
It was connecting before.
Certainly. And just to be for fun, I, of course, took a system image before I did it.
Smart.
I laid the system image back down.
Yeah.
And it connected just fine. I did another reset, and it won't connect.
Is there Drobo software that you didn't reinstall that you might need?
Well, Drobo requires...
The dashboard.
Actually require, but it has a dashboard,
yeah,
that's an administrative tool, not a sharing tool.
Right.
So none of my systems have the dashboard on,
okay,
except the server. I quote server, just my main PC. Now, I have other network shares around in the house, and I've gone using the PowerShell get SMB connection command, and I can see that my other Windows PCs that are serving up network shares and the Drobo to the systems that I can connect to, they're all serving it up on SMB version 3.
Oh, that's important because version 1 has been deprecated for security reasons.
Yes, and the server, the Windows 10 1803 reset that I did was post the June 2018 Windows update, which is where that deprecation got effected. And I've been to Drobo, and
does Drobo need Samba 1?
No. The Drobo is actually running, to the connections to the other systems, it's running version 3, SMB version 3.
Okay.
So
it would, it should work.
It should work, yes.
That is something that, you know, Microsoft has changed.
Yes. And the Drobo 5N supports version 3.
Okay.
And in my case, it's running version 3.
Okay.
I can satisfy my immediate need by rolling that one system back to my system image.
Yeah, but you want 1803 on here.
Well, the system image is 1803.
Oh, it still is. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was 1803, but the system was overheating.
Right.
So, you know, the easy thing is it's a throwaway system, blow it away.
Yeah, start over.
It,
yeah.
Everything's fine. Well, I blew it away, rebuilt it, and the overheating persisted. So it's a hardware problem with the fan.
Right.
So now I can lay it back down to 1803 from my system image and access my Drobo. What worries me is that if I go buy another device, I'm not gonna be able to upgrade it in line. I'm gonna have to start with a clean install.
Yeah.
And my experience to date says the clean install won't connect to the Drobo, so.
This is a fairly advanced topic. I'm a Drobo user myself. They were a sponsor for a long time. I did use a 5N for a long time. I'm not using one today. And it does sound like this might be something, you know, Microsoft changed the networking stack with 1803. It might be something, I think this is a call to Drobo, unfortunately, because it sounds like there might be a driver or some sort of software that Drobo used to work. That would make sense because it was installed in the old image, but it's not installed in the clean install. And it probably is on your other machines, but what it is, I don't know. So I think you're going to have to call Drobo and see if it is a bad Drobo. Well, it can't be because it works on the other machines. Somebody in the chat room saying, and I think this is the case, the Drobo dashboard is more than just a user interface. It does install some drivers. And I note that if I don't install the Drobo dashboard on my Macintosh with a clean install, I can't see the Drobo. So maybe that's the key. Maybe that's the key. SMB, Server Message Blocks, is a networking protocol used by Microsoft. And, SMB 1 was superseded by SMB 2, which has since been superseded by SMB 3. I think it was superseded at least 10 years ago. But Microsoft always serves the master of down or backward compatibility, right? And so SMB 1, until 1803, the latest version of Windows, was supported. That turned out to be not such a good thing because the NSA, oh, what a tangled web we weave, had created a hacking tool that was able to spread through Windows networks using a flaw in SMB 1. The original Samba protocol. Actually, the original Samba protocol is more than 30 years old. So it shouldn't be used, but unfortunately, it was on every version of Windows. Microsoft says, stop using it. It's not efficient. It's not modern. And most importantly, it has a major security flaw in it. Oh, did I mention the NSA found the flaw? But then, silly NSA, they got hacked. An NSA contractor took all of the NSA hacking tools home with him. The story goes that he had installed an antivirus program called Kaspersky on his system, a Russian antivirus software. One of the things that Kaspersky did was if it found something unusual on your drive, it would send a copy back to the home offices in Moscow. And it's believed, NSA is not talking, but it's believed by many security experts that what happened is this contractor took home the NSA exploits, the NSA hacking tools, put them on his machine. Kaspersky said, oh, look, here's some hacking stuff. Uploaded it to Moscow. Kaspersky, which we're told now by the U.S. government not to use, by the way, even though, you know, many people have used Kaspersky for years. It's a very good antivirus. But it seems like they have some relationship with the Russian Secret Service. Somehow the hacking tools got uploaded to Moscow and then somehow got handed off to the Russian Secret Service, where it became part of a state-sponsored hack that was used a few months later to bring down the internet. So, or nearly, very nearly bring down the internet. So, long story short, Microsoft no longer supports SMB1. My guess is there's something going on in 1803 that might be related to changes. I think they eliminated the home networking group. There's a whole bunch of networking changes, and that might be what you're experiencing. But I think only Drobo could untangle this tale. Tech Guy Podcast brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans, the number one lender in the country. Let's talk about home buying for a minute. It's both a joy and a nightmare. It's a joy because you're shopping for the most important purchase you'll ever make, the most expensive in most cases, too. And there's a little anxiety, though, because interest rates have been going up, right? So as you're buying, you know, you feel like the clock's ticking. If you take too long, the rates are going to go up. It's going to cost you more. But you don't want to rush buying something this important. We can get rid of the anxiety. Quicken Loans has something they call the power buying process. It's at rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. Here's how it works. They'll verify your income, assets, and credit. This is in less than 24 hours. You'll get verified approval. By the way, that's as good as cash when you're buying a house. The seller knows, hey, they're good for it. They got the loan already. So verified approval is great. But then, this is the new part. Once you're verified, you qualify for their all-new Rate Shield approval. This is exclusive. They lock up your rate for 90 days while you shop. You have 3 months to look at houses without any fear that interest rates will go up. They're locked in at that rate. Now, if they go down, that's good because the rate will go down. It just doesn't go up. Either way, you win. This is exactly what you'd expect from America's best mortgage lender. Quicken Loans just got it going on. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply. Based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. Rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. Take the anxiety out of shopping for home. And then it's just fun. Then it's just like, oh, can't wait to see what's next. It's nice to be able to take your time. Rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. 8888-ASK, Leo, line 2, Gene in Valley Village, California. Hi, Gene.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
Hello.
Hello. How you doing?
Sorry. I heard you talk earlier to someone about the Wyzecam.
Wyzecam, yeah.
I haven't gotten it yet, but I was planning on getting it, and it surprised me to find out that you needed a smartphone. I don't have a cell phone. Could you recommend the least expensive phone that might work with the Wyzecam?
Yeah. So briefly, people understand, Wyze is W-Y-Z-E. It's a company out of Washington State that makes really the most inexpensive security cameras I've ever seen. They have a $20 Wyzecam, and then I've been talking about this Wyzecam Pan, which is, wow, $30. And it's what we call a pan-tilt zoom camera. You can control it from your smartphone, aim the camera at anything. It has a patrol function as well, where it looks for motion around the room. It'll notify you via your smartphone if there's motion. And I think the real savings compared to something like Google's Nest Cam or the Ring camera, the other cameras, is these other cameras charge you a monthly or yearly fee for storage.
Right.
They record, but they record to the cloud. The Wyzecam does not. They will save 2 weeks worth of video, which is more than enough.
Mm-hmm.
They only record video when there's motion. That's fine. You don't want to see it when there's nothing going on.
Mm-hmm.
But if they send you an alert, you can go look. You can go look back in time all the way up to 2 weeks, and they don't charge you for that. So it's $30 out the door. So in my mind, that's such a good deal. The fact that they don't have a website for this seems minor. But you know, because most people do have smartphones. But if you don't have an Android or iOS phone, well, you actually, does it have an Android? I think it does, yeah. So it's Android or iOS. You can't use it at all. It just, there's nothing to see. So you could go out and get a cheap Android or iOS device. That would be easy. It need to be connected to the internet, obviously.
Okay.
Because that's how it, you know, talks to your, that's how the phone talks to the camera and the camera talks to the phone. So you'd need either to sign up with a phone company for some internet connectivity or just use it at home with Wi-Fi. So if you do that, then you could go out and buy a sub $100 cheap Android phone or Android tablet with Wi-Fi and only use it where you have Wi-Fi at home, for instance. So maybe put the camera in your office, have the cheap phone at home. You can get Android phones for $50.
Okay.
You know, they're cheap. If it's the cost would be the monthly fee for the internet access. So if you don't need to use it when you walk out the door, if you only need to use it at home, this would work fine.
Yeah, because I don't live in a house. I just live in a small apartment. I just need it to collect somebody who's coming in the door and going out.
Yeah, I mean, that's one really good use for it is just to have it, you know, looking at the door.
And I guess if I have questions, I can just call them.
Yeah, and my experience is
electronics.
Yeah. Well, my experience with them is they have pretty good support. WYZECAM.com.
Mm-hmm.
It really is designed for the tech community that has smartphones. But I think, you know, if you understand that, hey, the worst case, you don't need, if you're just looking at the front door, get the $20 one.
Right.
And at worst case, you're out $20.
Exactly. And how, I know this is going beyond what you want to talk about, but exactly besides the phone that it would collect video on, is it possible for you, I'm thinking of this for a legal matter. For instance, if I'm trying to catch somebody, do they keep the video, can you upload the video to someplace else?
Yes.
Oh, good.
So you can save the video for later, and you would need to do that. It has a timestamp on it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you obviously have to ask a lawyer, you know, whether it would be useful and you know, probative in court, but I think it would be.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a lawyer. You should ask Bill Handel that one. Not that he's a very good lawyer, but, and I say that with love. Bill and I are good friends. He always says he's got marginal legal advice, but that would be one a lawyer would be able to tell you, well, is that good enough? I have friends who have been, sad to say, harassed by, you know, ex-boyfriends and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I have recommended this for them. I think it's a good, you know, it gives, if nothing else, it gives you peace of mind. Because if somebody's at your door, somebody comes in your door, you will get an alert and you will have video of it.
Well, my point is trying to prove it because this has happened before.
Well, I would think if you go in front of a judge and you say, Your Honor, I have the video. They're not, you know, I mean, that's, I would say that's pretty useful. But again, I'm not a lawyer, so.
Right, right. That's good enough for me.
Okay, and you have Wi-Fi in your apartment.
See, I'm lost when it comes to electronics. I don't understand what, you mean a router?
Yeah, you need to have internet access at home. You have that, right?
I have that, but it's wired. It's a cable. I don't have a router. I have a modem. But I can get a router.
Yeah, so there's going to be additional cost because this doesn't connect with a wire, it goes wireless, as will your Android device, too, by the way. Neither one of them connects with a wire. So you'll need to go out and get a Wi-Fi access point that connects to your cable modem and gives you wireless access in the apartment.
And that's what a router is?
Yep.
Okay, great.
It's called a wireless access point. You already have a router. You need a wireless access point.
Wireless access.
Yeah. And by the way, there is, I don't use it, but there is a slot on the camera for a micro SD card, and it will record to the SD card. So you can also have a local recording as well. And if you do that, you don't need Wi-Fi. You just won't get alerts. It'll just be recording to this thing, and you'll have to check it manually. If you think somebody's intruded, you'll have to pull that little card out, put it in a reader, attach it to your computer, and scan through it. But it will do that. So if you didn't need, if that would be sufficient, you wouldn't have to have Wi-Fi.
Okay. Great.
All right.
Thank you so much.
I'm so glad I could help. I know that's a terrifying thing when that happens, and far too many women especially are subject to this problem. And so anything I can do to help. I think this is really a remarkable company making something pretty amazing. And you really, I've mentioned this before, but you got to give credit to Apple. Because if Apple had made the iPhone, it wouldn't have created a manufacturing monster out of China that makes this stuff cheap. Oceanside, California. Hi, Dennis. Thanks for holding on.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you?
Too hot, even down here in Oceanside.
It is miserable, isn't it?
We don't have AC, so...
Well, you didn't need AC 99% of the time.
4 days a year, I need it.
Yep, and it's those 4 days that just kill you.
Yeah. Anyway, hi. Nice talking to you again.
Yes.
Took your advice this time. I'm sure you remember. You helped me update my old laptop, and then I went shopping for a smartphone.
Good man.
And I ended up getting the Moto G6.
Excellent.
And I was the guy with the old StarTech flip phone.
Yes, it was time.
And anyway, I am, since I don't have any other experience with a smartphone, never had an Apple device, I have to say I am very impressed with this Moto G6.
Oh, that's good. I do recommend it a lot, so I'm glad to get additional feedback. I think they do a great job, and it's, what, $249, right? It's very affordable.
At Verizon, it's $240.
Yep.
And I added a Gorilla Glass screen protector for like $25 and a case that's a great case for about $39. And I really like it.
Good.
It's doing everything. It does security updates as long as you have those turned on.
That's the key on Android. You want to make sure you get that monthly security update.
And it also does updates on all of the Android applications.
Yeah, it should do that automatically. Yeah.
Yes, it does.
Very important. Anything in your phone needs to be kept up to date.
So it lets me know that's going on every time it happens. And good. I'm very impressed. The camera's unbelievably outstanding. And if there's only one complaint, it would be, and I'm sure it's the same with all glass-based smartphones, my stubby little fingers have a hard time typing on the glass screen.
Yeah.
But it has voice recognition, which works about 90% accurate.
Yeah, that's the Google Assistant. That's really quite good. I would say it's the best of them all.
So anyway, I just wanted to give you a report.
Thank you.
I really like it.
Thank you.
It's doing everything I want a smartphone to do.
Nice, Dennis. Nice.
Let me check my smartphone. 1 second here. Let me check it. My smartphone tells me right now it's 90 degrees in Oceanside and 97 degrees in the high desert.
Yeah. If it's 90 in Oceanside, it's 115 in L.A.
Yeah. I know. So anyway, I just want to let you know. Thank you very much.
Hey, nice to talk to you. Thanks for calling. I appreciate it. Yeah, I'm just looking at the Pixel. The Android phone I use is the Google Android phone. The Pixel 2 XL is the one I carry. And the main reason I do is because Google updates. You know, Google puts out its updates monthly, early in the month. The problem is with most phones, Google then has to send it to Motorola, which has to approve it, which then sends it to the carrier, Verizon or Sprint or AT&T, whoever you know you use, and they have to approve it, and then maybe they'll push it out to you. So there's three different layers of slowdown, speed bumps here. If you have a Google phone, it's just the one. When Google updates it, they push it out. And in my case, the security patch I have on here is from July 5th, 2018, this week. So you should expect, in fact, before I would buy an Android phone, I would just go on the phone, make sure it's up to date. And, if they're not updating at the phone store, well, that all bets are off. But if it's up to date, there's no more updates available, and then you want to look and see. And it shouldn't be more than a few months since the last security patch. Google does those every month in the first week or two of the month. Ideally, you'd see the current one. But I understand there's no speed bumps, so at least within the last few months. If it's from 2017, do not buy that phone. Just isn't safe. Rose, Torrance, California. Hi, Rose. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Oh, hi, Mr. Leo. Thank you for setting my call. How are you doing?
I'm well, Rose. How are you?
Okay, top. So I'm still inside the car.
It's hot.
Driving.
See, you didn't mind me keeping you on hold. That gave you an excuse to stay in the car.
Well, I finished my errand, so it's all good waiting.
Good.
Yeah, just quick question. Because my neighbor, you know, she was just Googling and all. And then she found out, like, just on her address. And then it suddenly popped up in my name. And it has, like, a prefix of doctor in it. So, and then I checked it. So, yeah, it is. So, my name has a doctor in it. You know, I have a doctorate degree and all that. So, I was wondering, I know there's, like, false information in the internet. And also, I just want to ask you, because I don't want this.
I understand. So here's the deal. There are public records. There always have been public records. When you buy a house, that's recorded at the county seat. And somebody can, you know, in the past, somebody could go down to the county seat and say, well, who lives at number one Main Street? And it would say, oh, yeah, Rose lives there. There's public records of your doctorate, right? Because you got your doctorate, you got your degree. And the university makes a public record that, so people can, you know, verify it. The problem we have now is in the old days, you'd have to go to the county seat to get that information. You'd have to go to the university, or you'd have to mail, you know, put something in an envelope and put a stamp on and mail them a request for information. Well, there's companies, multiple companies now, that just go around to the county seats and they get everything and they put it online. So essentially, everything that's ever been a public record, including arrest records, court documents, property records, anything that's a public record is on the internet and can easily be found by somebody searching for your name. There's nothing you can do about that. You can go to these individual sites. The individual sites all have an opt-out form, but there's many sites. You don't know all the sites. So you could, one by one, do a Google search for your name, then go to that site, say, please take me out of your database. And by the way, maybe it'll take them a week. Maybe it'll take them a month. Maybe they'll forget and never do it. They're not legally required to do it.
But the thing is, I am not a doctor.
Oh, so it's wrong. Well, but anybody who does searches on the internet, unfortunately, not everybody knows this, should know. Sometimes this stuff's wrong. There is probably somebody with your name who is a doctor. So, and again, not much you can do about it. There are companies. You'll see companies, Reputation Defender is one. But there are many companies that will do reputation repair. In Europe, there is a law called the Right to be Forgotten. And it's a silly law, but it is the law in Europe. If you, let's say you had an arrest conviction and there was an article written about it 15 years ago, but you would prefer nobody see that. But unfortunately, thanks to Google, you just search for that and you can find it. It's, even though it's 15 years old in an obscure newspaper in the south of England, it's still there. Well, in Europe, you can go to Google and say, get rid of that search result. That's weird. You should, and you probably do have the right to go to the newspaper and say, take that off the web. Maybe not, because it's public again. But you could at least ask the newspaper. But the way they've done it in Europe is you don't even go to the newspaper. You just, it turns out, if nobody can find it, doesn't matter if it exists on the internet, right? So you just tell Google. And Google is legally required in Europe, and I find this insane, to go through each one of these right-to-be-forgotten requests, somehow adjudicate them, decide, about half of them they honor, and take that out of the search results. I think that's silly. That's a very silly rule. So what about these reputation defenders? Well, the way they work, they don't remove stuff from the internet. And boy, this is something everybody should understand. Once it's on the internet, that's kind of permanent. But what they do is they bury the results by creating a lot more content in your name. So those will show up higher in the search rankings. People don't go to page 2 or 3 of the search ranking and thereby hide it that way. That's very expensive. It does work if you spend, you know, thousands of dollars a month. Really important to understand. Anything you put on the internet stays on the internet. Unfortunately, a lot of things that are public records are also on the internet and easily found. Best thing to do, go to Congress. We got to change that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's go to Steve in San Diego. Hello, Steve.
Hi, how you doing, Leo? Thank you for taking my call.
I am great. How are you?
I'm at the end of my ropes after a few weeks. I just purchased a brand new Dell Inspiron. Took it home. Had a friend of mine who's in IT hooked it up for me and was working okay. for about a little less than a week, and then all of a sudden my monitor, which is an old HP monitor, but working fine, because I owned an HP prior to this, and less than a week, and my monitor, when I logged on, my everything I went into, my email, everything, turned pastel colors. I went the whole route trying to get that out of there, went into settings, so on and so forth, the usual routine. Nothing. Called the IT techs, the manufacturer, could not help me. A lot of gobbledygook, techno nomenclature. They sent me a second computer, brand new out of the box.
It's not the computer. Wait a minute. Hold on. That's ridiculous. It's probably the cable. Could well be the monitor. No reason to suspect the computer at all. Now, you said it's an Inspiron. Is it a desktop?
A desktop, yes.
It's not a laptop, so you don't have a secondary screen. First thing you do if that happens, you borrow somebody else's screen, or if you can't do that, borrow a, or buy a different cable and check the cable. Because when you get color casts like that, usually means a pin is broken on the cable or there's something wrong with the monitor. Very rarely does it mean the computer. In fact, I'm amazed that Dell sent you another Inspiron. You must have really raised holy heck.
Yes, so what happened? Well, I had the cable checked. Cox came out, they checked the cable, everything was up and running, good signal. I had three.
Not the internet cable. Not the internet cable. The monitor cable. The cable connecting the monitor, not your internet. So you're casting all over the place. First thing you do, your screen turns a funny color. Just, you know, reconnect the cable on the back of the computer that's going to the screen and reconnect the cable on the screen that's going to the screen. That's an older monitor. Maybe it wore out. Maybe it's broken. Maybe the monitor cable is broken. If the cable is what we call normaled into the monitor, you can't remove it. It's wired in there. Well, that's hard because now, you know, it could be inside, but it could easily be that. So before you go crazy with your internet service provider and even Dell, I would just say, can I borrow your monitor? Go to a buddy's. Borrow a monitor and hook it up and see if it's still doing that. If it's the computer, it for sure will do it to any monitor you connect to it. But and use a different cable, by the way, because most likely it's just a bad cable. Honestly, it's not the internet service provider. And if I'm amazed that you got Dell to send you a new computer, because it's highly unlikely that it's the computer. It could, I mean, you know, I can think of scenarios. Maybe the video card is messed up or something like that. But you got to test the monitor. And more importantly, the monitor cable first. The key to troubleshooting, the key to fixing a problem with a computer is to do the simple, dumb, quick stuff first, like swapping cables. Do the hard stuff later. Anaheim, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, David.
Hey, Leo. How are you, sir?
Wonderful. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thanks for taking my call, sir. Hey, I have a Netgear N600 gigabit router and called Netgear recently to see about upgrading the firmware on that puppy. Got quite a few things connected to it, cable modems and a couple of docking stations and, you know, yada, yada. But my support agreement had expired on it. It's kind of an old modem or router. It's like 2010, but have been operating on the impression that updates would be automatically going to it, so I hadn't been real concerned about it.
Yeah. But unfortunately, older routers are all manual updates. It's very rare. The newer routers, when you buy a newer router, many of them, most of them now do automatic updates because that's so important. The good news is you don't have to have a service agreement to update a router. You just have to log, you know, you log into the router with your web browser,
right.
Whatever it is, 192.168.1.1 or 10.0.0.1, whatever the address is, you, I hope, have a password on it. You'll enter the password. And then usually it's in the advanced section. You'll look for check firmware. You want to see what the current version is, and then look for an update. Sometimes it'll tell you, you know, and sometimes you might have to look on the website, but almost always, even if the router is long out of warranty, which that is, there'll be, if there's newer firmware, you'll be able to download it and apply it. And man, that's important.
Yeah, what I found curious was two things. One is that you know, I was talking about whether or not I should replace it, just given the age. I mean, I don't.
Yeah, I would.
Yeah, I would. They were really adamant. And only time I've ever experienced this, they were really adamant about not upgrading, especially when I mentioned, you know, the mesh technology that I've heard.
Yeah, you don't want that stuff. No, no, no. Keep your old router. No.
Yeah, they were pushing just to do the support again.
Netgear, by the way, this is the irony, sells a mesh router.
Yeah, I...
And wait a minute, you were paying them for a support agreement?
No, I didn't. It
Good.
Had expired, but that's what they were pushing me to get.
Oh, yeah, that's an annuity for them. That's oh, a yeah. check every yeah. month. Wait yeah, a minute. Like, so is this a business-specific router? What's the router again?
It's a Netgear N600.
N600. Huh.
Yeah.
I didn't know they sold support agreements on this thing. That's rare because a router is really a consumer. This is a consumer device.
Yeah, it is. And they wanted, like, for 2 years, it was like $230.
Oh, please. Give me a break.
Yeah, exactly.
And for what? They don't even automatically update it.
Yeah, I couldn't buy into that. So I wanted to kind of pick your brain on, I've heard you talk again about mesh technology, but
yeah.
I'm not sure where to start on that as far as a brand or, you know, just a starting point.
So let me talk about what these things are. You may not need one. How big is is the area that you want to light up?
1,600 feet.
Okay, that's fairly small. Usually a single router is enough. Do you have issues with slow Wi-Fi or lots of buffering when you watch video, things like that?
We do when we're doing like Hulu or...
Yeah, if you're watching Hulu and the kid's watching Netflix and upstairs grandma's watching Amazon Prime, well, of course, because you only have a certain amount of bandwidth. You can't... No router will magically improve that. I don't think you need a mesh unless you have dead spots. But I think you do need a new router. Every few years, you should get a new router. You can get a new Netgear. They're great. Or Asus. I really like Asus routers. In the mesh brands, they're a little more expensive because you usually get more than one unit. Eero, which is a sponsor I like and use at home, is very good. Any of those would be fine. Probably just a new Netgear. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I had to break. Sorry. There's a website called The Wire Cutter, New York Times website, that reviews Wi-Fi routers. And I've found them to be very reliable. In fact, I know the guy that does their reviews. So, you know, they would give you some good recommendations. In fact, their number one router is a Netgear R7000.
Okay,
so cool. Nothing wrong with that. You don't need, with 1,500 square feet, unless you've got, is it upstairs, downstairs, or is it flat?
No, flat.
If it's flat and you don't have, like, metal walls, probably a single router's fine.
Okay, cool. I'll check that out.
Yeah.
Hey, Leo, I appreciate it as always. Thank you so much.
Hey, it's great to talk to you. Thanks for the call.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Synology is an excellent TP-Link. They've recommended for years as the budget pick. The Netgear R7000 Nighthawk is $160. That's great. That's probably a really good choice. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.